Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You guys know the drill by now. You hand us your stack of sources, your articles, your research, your notes, and we try to extract those really vital nuggets of knowledge so you can walk away informed.
And fully engaged, hopefully.
Well, exactly. And today, you have handed us something incredibly specific. And honestly, it's just completely fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It's a highly technical manual.
Yeah. Chapter 11, specifically, of Kistamato's uncompromising fighting system.
Which is, I mean, legendary in the boxing world.
Totally legendary. So the mission for today's deep dive is to sort of unpack how this deep psychological warfare actually translates into physical biomechanics in the ring.
Right, the actual physical movement.
Because imagine stepping into a boxing match, but instead of focusing on just, you know, brute force or brawling, you're suddenly looking at a high-level geometry problem.
It's all math and angles.
Exactly. The goal isn't just to hit someone. It's to become, quite literally, physically invulnerable.
Right, and to really grasp how you achieve that, you know, that invulnerability, you have to understand the core doctrine of this entire system.
Which is a bit of a paradox.
A massive paradox, yeah. The central doctrine is that absolute defense is achieved by making offense and defense the exact same physical movement.
The exact same movement.
Yeah. So in this system, there's this strict, totally non-negotiable no reaction rule.
Okay. So when I hear no reaction, my mind just immediately goes to, like, stoicism.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you take a massive punch to the jaw, you don't flinch, and you just keep walking forward like the Terminator. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I mean, that's a really common assumption, but in the system, it goes much, much deeper than just hiding pain.
Okay.
The no reaction rule means that the standard human instinct, like, you get hit, so you hit back, or you swing and then brace to take a counter that is completely forbidden.
Wow. Forbidden.
Yeah. D'Amato taught that technique should never, ever be the result of a reaction to your opponent. Instead, you exist in this this continuous, unbroken state of attack.
Just constantly moving forward.
Exactly. But here is the genius of it, right? This attack is designed in such a way that the very act of you moving forward and striking simultaneously prevents the opponent from physically being able to strike you.
Because they're too busy defending.
Exactly. You force them to constantly defend, which means they literally cannot mount an offense.
I have to admit, that sounds, you know, great in theory.
But physically impossible.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, how can you be purely on the offensive, constantly pressing forward, without leaving yourself just completely open at some point?
It's a fair question.
Like, usually see these highly defensive fighters who have sacrificed their offense just to stay safe, or aggressive brawlers who just take massive damage to land their shots.
Right. And the source material actually highlights this exact flaw in traditional fighting. It brings up fighters who are brilliant defensively, but by being too defensive, they just totally neutralize their own offense.
Right. They can't do both.
Exactly. Oh. So what this system wanted was to put a fighter in a defensive position that was simultaneously a launching pad for an attack.
Okay.
And to answer your question about how that's physically possible, the secret doesn't lie in just, you know, holding your gloves up higher.
Right. Just walking more.
No, it lies in spatial geometry, specifically avoiding what the system calls the square.
The square, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already know that staying in the square, like hanging out on the center line directly in front of your opponent, is basically a death sentence in combat sports.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're directly in front of them, you're right in their crosshairs. But standard boxing usually just teaches you to slip your head off that center line. This system takes it somewhere else entirely, doesn't it?
It really does. It completely overhauls the footwork. Because the real flaw in traditional fighting is linearity.
Moving straight back and forth.
Exactly. If you move straight backward, away from a punch, you're still on that center line.
You're just slightly further away.
Right. You're just a target that's further back. But as soon as they step forward again, you can still be hit. So the goal of this system is to always be outside of the opponent's shoulders.
So you can reach them, but they can't reach you.
Exactly. You can reach their chin or their body, but their arms physically cannot angle enough to hit you back.
And the origins of how they actually achieve this geometry are just wild to me.
Yeah.
Because we aren't even looking at traditional boxing roots here.
No, no, not at all. The roots of this specific movement take their origin in Spain and the south of Italy.
Which is fascinating.
Places like Sicily and Apulia, which were these historical centers for the Neapolitan school of fencing. So we're talking about dueling with short blades and knives.
Wait, wait. So the foundational footwork for this legendary heavyweight boxing style is ripped straight out of European knife fighting.
Precisely. I mean, think about the logic of a knife duel.
You can't just take a hit.
Exactly. Taking a hit to give a hit is not an option, because taking a hit means you bleed out and die.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
You have to be truly invulnerable. So the system adapted what are called Spanish angles. You never, ever move linearly.
Okay, so how do you move?
You take a long or short Spanish angle, meaning you step diagonally forward and to the outside of your opponent. And you navigate these angles using this very specific, highly disciplined footwork pattern known as the half moon.
The half moon. Okay, can you walk us through the actual physical sensation of that? Like, if I'm in the ring, how am I executing a half moon step?
So it's a very grounded skimming movement. Your energy stays entirely on the balls of your feet.
So no flat feet.
Never. Now, if you need to move to your left, you don't just sidestep. Your left foot moves first, stepping outward in this curved arc.
Okay.
And then your right foot drags across the canvas exactly 6 inches.
Exactly 6 inches. That's so precise.
It has to be. And if you're moving to the right foot steps in an arc and the left foot drags exactly 6 inches. You're tracing a semicircle, a half moon, around your opponent, moving straight across their peripheral vision.
Just constantly circling them.
Right. And by doing this, you stay on the outside, slipping into those Spanish angles. It completely disorients the opponent. And more importantly, because you're on their outside shoulder, they can never reach out and tie you up in a clinch.
Okay, so it's almost like it's like a revolving door.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like if they push forward aggressively, you aren't standing there trying to block the door with brute strength. You're just slipping into the next compartment of the door.
Yes.
And as they stumble forward into that empty space you just left, you're hitting them in the back as they stumble through.
That is a perfect visualization. You are constantly displacing the target while placing yourself in a superior striking position.
But practically speaking, this brings up a huge logistical problem, doesn't it? Well, moving in half moons and hitting these Spanish angles, it sounds like this beautiful dance in theory.
Mm.
But how do you maintain that kind of agility without crossing your legs and just, you know, tripping over your own feet?
It does sound complicated, yeah.
You're talking about dragging feet exactly 6 inches, keeping this perfect arc, all while some 200-pound athlete is actively trying to take your head off. If I'm tracking someone in half moons and they suddenly rush me, my center of gravity is going to be a total mess.
And that right there brings us to the absolute engine of this entire fighting style.
Okay.
None of this Neapolitan geometry works without a foundation of constant perfect balance. The source text actually makes it a point to heavily warn against becoming what they call a one-leg fighter.
A one-leg fight. So you're talking about weight distribution there, right? Like when someone throws a heavy punch and all their momentum pitches forward?
Exactly. When most people attack, even professionals, they lunge to close the gap. And when they do, their body weight shifts almost entirely onto that front foot.
Leaving the back leg behind.
Right. Their back leg is essentially just dragging dead weight. And if your weight is 100% committed to that front leg, you are incredibly vulnerable.
You can't move.
Exactly. You have zero balance to evade a counter. And you certainly can't spring quickly to the side to hit a Spanish angle. So to solve this, D'Amato focused relentlessly on an exercise and technical biomechanic called the twist.
The twist. Let's really clarify the biomechanics of this, because reading through the sources, I found it a bit confusing.
It can be.
It describes a split-second, 180-degree spring. Now, if I just jump up in the air and spin my whole body 180 degrees, I'm going to land with my back facing my opponent, which is obviously not what we want in a boxing match.
Right. It is definitely not a pirouette.
Okay, good.
The crucial thing to understand is that it's a 180-degree rotation of the hips and the core. Not your external silhouette.
Ah, I see.
You're torquing your lower body violently to slip a punch and load up kinetic energy, but your eyes, your gloves, and your upper body guard stay completely locked on the target.
So it's an internal coil.
Yes. You spring slightly, and most of your weight stays anchored about 70-30 on that front foot, and you violently twist your hips to absorb and evade an attack, and then you snap right back.
Like a rubber band.
It's a plyometric bounce, exactly. And the critical factor is that the fighter springs and lands in the exact same perfect defensive and offensive posture they started in.
So no adjusting?
None. You never have to pause, step back, and reset your footing. The second your feet touch the canvas, you are fully balanced and instantaneously ready to deliver hits.
That sounds incredibly explosive and exhausting.
It is both. but it's incredibly effective. The co-author of the source book, Tom Patyat, who actually lived and trained with Cuss, he shares a pretty wild real-world application of this.
Oh, the Mexico story.
Yeah, it's a pure stress test of the system.
Yeah.
He was traveling in Mexico and ended up in a highly chaotic situation where he was surrounded by three aggressive men.
All attacking him at once.
Right. They tried to attack him simultaneously.
I mean, 3-on-1 is usually a catastrophic mathematical equation for the one, no matter how good your footwork is.
Normally, yes. And if Patty had lunged at the first attacker, if he had become that one-leg fighter we talked about, he would successfully hit guy number one, but his weight would be completely committed forward,
leaving his blind side wide open.
Exactly. Guys two and three would have crushed him. But Patty deployed the twist. The moment the violence started, he didn't back up linearly, and he didn't lunge. He used the twist to spring, loading his core torque, and struck the first attacker.
And then just twisted again.
Because the twist allowed him to maintain that perfect front foot balance.
Yeah.
He immediately torqued his hips again to strike the second and then the third in rapid machine gun succession.
Because he never had to reset his feet.
Exactly. He bounced between targets without ever compromising his center of gravity. He knocked all three of them out incredibly quickly because he was never caught off guard or off balance.
It's just like a loaded coil. Like most people jump, throw a strike, and then they have to physically step back and, you know, reset their feet to find their balance.
Which takes time.
Right. It takes a second or two. And in a fight, 2 seconds is a lifetime.
Yeah.
But this system ensures you are always landing fully loaded. Every time your soles touch the canvas, the kinetic chain is just primed to snap again.
Exactly. You're always in a physical position to either move your head off the center line or change your angle of attack instantly.
Okay, so let's put these pieces together. We have the geometry down. I'm moving in half moons and grabbing Spanish angles on the outside.
Right.
We have the engine running there. My core is torqued up with the twist, and I have perfect balance. But eventually, you know, I actually have to throw a punch and do some damage.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
How does this system translate all that perfect positioning into an actual strike? Let's talk about the arsenal.
This is where we get into D'Amato's famous numbered punch system.
Right.
And just like the footwork, it is completely unconventional.
Surprise, surprise.
Right. It's an auditory code designed specifically to confuse anyone who isn't inside the camp.
Yes.
In standard boxing gyms, trainers will just yell out combinations like, give me a 1-2, which universally means a jab and a cross.
Right. Everyone knows that.
But in this system, the jab, which is the most basic, fundamental punch in all of boxing, is assigned the number 7.
Number 7.
The left hook is number 1. The right jab is number 2. Left and right body shots are 5 and 6.
And the uppercuts?
The left uppercut is 3 and the right uppercut is 4.
Okay, I have to ask, why map the most common fundamental punch to the number 7 instead of number 1? Is that just to scramble the opponent's corner?
That's a big part of it, yeah.
Like, if the other trainer's trying to eavesdrop and predict what you're about to throw, they hear 7 and just have no idea what's coming.
That is exactly it. It's cryptographic. It prevents the opponent from anticipating the attack. And the mechanics of these 7 punches are incredibly rigid and specific.
Really? How so?
Take the number 1, for instance, the left hook. The manual explicitly states that when throwing the number 1, your elbow must be exactly on the same level as your fist. You never drop the elbow.
Why is the elbow height so critical?
2 reasons. First, leverage. If you drop the elbow, you lose the structural lever of your arm and the power just diminishes.
Okay, makes sense.
Second, and more importantly for that invulnerability doctrine, keeping the elbow high means you naturally engage your shoulder to cover your own shin while you swing.
Oh, wow.
You're structurally protecting your own knockout button at the exact moment you are attacking. Offense and defense become the same movement.
So you have these 7 highly refined, basically mathematically precise punches.
Correct. And those 7 basic punches allow for a nearly infinite number of combinations, usually strung together in explosive series of 2 to 6 blows.
And the opponent knows this, right?
They do. They spend months in training camp preparing for these combinations. But the real genius of the system, the thing that made these fighters legendary world champions, is what the system calls the plus one.
The plus one?
Yeah, the whole arsenal is actually referred to as the 7+1 system.
What exactly is this secret weapon, the plus one?
The plus one is a highly guarded, bespoke technical element designed specifically for an individual fighter's unique physiology. It is completely custom built.
So everyone has a different one.
Exactly. You can't teach one fighter's plus one to another fighter. For example, Floyd Patterson had incredible natural agility, so his plus one was a devastating side punch that he delivered while physically leaping through the air.
Which most trainers would tell you never to do.
Exactly. Mike Tyson had these massive tree trunk legs. His plus one was a strike delivered from a deeply crouched, almost upside down position where he would violently snap his legs straight to generate this terrifying amount of upward power.
Insane.
And Muhammad Ali, who actually consulted with Cus, had a technical element where he would turn his shoulders and extend his arms in such an unusual way that opponents physically couldn't get inside his reach.
That is brilliant psychological warfare. The plus one isn't just a heavy punch, it's a weaponized distraction.
Exactly. The opponent steps into the ring, bracing for the seven. They're expecting the flurry of those numbered combinations. They're so busy trying to track the half-moon footwork and defend against a four-punch combination that their attention is completely monopolized.
And that's when you get them.
That is the exact fraction of a second when you hit them with the plus one. It's a strike they've never seen on tape. It defies standard boxing logic, and it's built entirely around your unique physical advantages.
So it's like a street magician doing a sleight of hand trick.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
The seven punches are the flourish, right? They're the brightly colored cape waiting in your face, commanding all of your visual attention.
Right.
You are so focused on surviving the flourish that you don't even see the magician's other hand slipping the watch off your wrist. Except in this case, the watch is your consciousness.
Exactly.
The plus one just puts you to sleep.
That is exactly the philosophy. And the manual refers to this as the B effect. The foundational belief here is that a knockout doesn't actually come from sheer blunt force. No, I mean, you can hit a guy with a sledgehammer, but if he sees it coming, his brain will brace his neck muscles and he might actually survive it. Knockouts happen through tricks, through the deception of the eyes.
Like a bee sting.
Right. The source material compares it to a bee sting. A bee flies up and stings you in a fraction of a second before your nervous system even registers the insect is there.
Because it's the punch you don't anticipate that shuts off the lights.
Exactly. If a punch stings you instantly, often set up by a subtle feint or hidden behind the flurry of a combination your body physically cannot brace for it, that is the bee effect. It's the punch that lands in your blind spot.
Okay, I want to play devil's advocate here for a second because we need to pressure test this.
Sure, go for it.
This all sounds like a perfectly orchestrated symphony when you're standing in the center of the ring, you know, controlling the pace and managing the geometry. Half moons, plyometric twists, secret plus one punches, out of nowhere. They sound devastating when you have room to breathe.
Right, when things are going well.
But what happens when the math fails? What happens when you make a mistake? You get backed into a corner and you are trapped against the ropes. You have zero space to make a sweeping half moon step. Doesn't the whole system just collapse?
That is the ultimate test of the system, actually. And it's where the tactical mastery of the biomechanics really shines.
Okay, how?
Well, when a fighter is pressed into a corner and clinched, meaning the opponent is physically leaning on them, grabbing their arms, the standard flawed human reaction is one of two things.
What are they?
They either cover up in a high shell and just hope to survive the beating until the referee breaks it up, or they try to shove back with brute force, which just creates this sweaty, exhausting physical deadlock.
Right. You see it in almost every match. Two guys just leaning their entire body weight on each other against the ropes, burning out their shoulders, going absolutely nowhere.
Exactly. But in this system, you never push back when cornered.
Because pushing back is a reaction.
Yes. And remember, our very first rule, no reactions. Instead, you deploy the twist tactically as an escape hatch. When the opponent moves in close and commits their weight to pin you, you wait until the very last fraction of a second.
And then what?
Then you execute a micro twist. You drop your elevation slightly, torque your hips, and wriggle out of the trap, slipping around their outside shoulder as if you're just smoothly passing a stranger on a crowded sidewalk.
So you basically just vanish from the corner. You let their own forward pressure push them into the turnbuckle.
Yes, but you don't just escape. That's the critical detail from the manual. You never spring away just to create distance.
So what are you doing?
The exact physical biomechanics of the twist, that rapid 180-degree internal torque of the hips, naturally charges your rear hand. You're winding the spring.
Oh, wow.
So the very moment you slip out of that deadlock and the opponent stumbles forward into the empty void where your body used to be, you instantly unleash a devastating uppercut or a right hand.
So you're literally weaponizing their own forward momentum.
Exactly.
They think they have you pinned in a cage, but you use the twist to suddenly remove the wall of the cage And as they fall forward off balance, they just dive face first right into your plus one.
Precisely. You make them pay a massive price for trying to trap you. You take their most aggressive, dominant moment, and by simply shifting the geometry and torquing your core, you turn their pressure into their biggest vulnerability.
That's incredible.
And you do it all while maintaining that perfect 70-30 balance so you can strike with maximum knockout power.
Honestly, let's synthesize this incredible journey we've just been on. You gave us a stack of notes on a boxing manual, and it turned into a masterclass on biomechanics.
It really is, yeah.
We started with this brain-breaking paradox that absolute invulnerability comes from a continuous state of attack. We moved into the spatial geometry of the ring, learning how moving in straight lines is a death trap, and how Neapolitan Spanish angles and the gliding half moon keep you permanently out of the opponent's crosshairs.
Beautifully said.
We unpack the engine that powers it all, that plyometric, hip-torquing balance of the twist.
Yeah.
And saw how it sets up the cryptographic 7 plus 1 numbering system to create the blinding B effect.
Right.
And finally, we saw how those exact same internal mechanics can be used to turn a terrifying, claustrophobic corner trap into a devastating counterattack using the opponent's own aggressive momentum.
Yeah.
It really is physical chess at the highest possible level.
It truly is. And, you know, if we pull back and connect this hyper-specific boxing manual to the broader picture, it leaves you with a really profound concept to consider, even if you have absolutely no intention of ever putting on a pair of boxing gloves.
Definitely.
We talked a lot about the place one, the idea that this ultimate, highly personalized skill is built on top of incredibly strong standard fundamentals, the 7 basic punches. So the question becomes, what is your personal plus one in your own career or your own field?
Wow.
What is the unique, bespoke strength you have developed that completely sets you apart when everyone else out there is just throwing standard combinations?
That is a phenomenal question to leave on, because finding that unique advantage, that bespoke trick up your sleeve, is how you become truly invulnerable in whatever arena you're stepping into. So to all of you listening, take a look at your own geometry, find your own hidden angle, we'll catch you on the next deep dive.